Hello and welcome back to Combat Cat, Enemy Combatant Radio's weekly news program. We are joined by veteran wilderness activist Vicky Hoover of the Sierra Club. The Sierra Club has been heading the campaign to prevent drilling for the oil in the Arctic National Refuge. So Vicky, if you could start by maybe giving us some background on the Arctic Refuge, where it is, why it's important.
The Arctic National Wildlife Refuge is in a very remote, far off, far north, northeast corner of Alaska. It's about 16 million acres, and it's that far off corner in Alaska that most people have never been to, and until it became a political issue and was much in the news and still is, I think most people in this country had never heard of it, but they have now. Lots of people have heard of it who probably will never go there or will never get much closer to it. It's so remote that even Alaskans, most of the people in Alaska who live in the urban areas of Alaska, don't even go there because it even costs them quite a bit of money to get up there. But it's important because it is a unique biologically diverse area, the only place in our country and maybe in all of North America and all the circumpolar regions where there is a complete Arctic ecosystem from the headwaters of the rivers all the way to the ocean, with all the wildlife still there that was once there and pretty much undisturbed, very much undisturbed.
So how has it remained preserved for this long?
Well, it was recognized pretty early in the last century as a special place of unique wildlife and wilderness values. In the 1950s, Olaus and Marty Murray, two well-known scientists at that time, took a trip there, and well, they had been there before, and they took a longer trip there and documented some of the values and went to Washington to urge for its protection. And in 1960, under President Eisenhower, who is not generally known as a flaming liberal, but pretty much mainstream president, he designated a lot of that area as the Arctic National Wildlife Range, and that was the predecessor of today's refuge, which is a little bigger now, but even then, more than half a century ago, it was recognized as a place that needed protection.
And so what's happening now? Give us a summary of the situation.
Well, around the late 60s, oil was discovered along the north slope of Alaska, and that made a big difference. The area where oil was discovered, now known as Prudhoe Bay, was a little west of the refuge, so it didn't really affect the area that's the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. But the oil industry was sniffing out possibilities for future development, and they did some seismic testing and exploration and decided that there was probably a good bit of oil under the refuge as well. So due to their influence, in 1980, when the greater part of the Arctic refuge was made designated wilderness and thus protected from that kind of commercial activity, they left out a key part, namely the coastal plain of the refuge, which is the wildlife-rich area, where the wildlife congregate the most. They left that out of the wilderness and left it subject to future study to see whether it should be opened up in the future. But a key part of the law provided that they would not be allowed to open this area to development without having Congress pass a specific law to that effect. And that's where we are now, really. Congress has several times tried to pass a law that would open up the area, and we've stopped them every time so far.
How much oil do we think is in the refuge, and what impact would it have on the energy crisis?
Well, nobody really knows for sure because they haven't done real drilling there. They've done seismic testing, and one test well was drilled in one place of the coastal plain. But there are varying estimates, but a common estimate of about 3 or 4 billion barrels, I guess it is considered to be about enough to hold this country for probably close to 6 months. And that's not a long time. considering how much oil this country uses. But it would permanently, to develop that oil, which is considered to be pretty much widespread, spread out under a lot of the acreage of the refuge, which is 1.5 million acres in the coastal plain, and the oil is pretty spread out under there, that would pretty much ruin all the wilderness aspects of it as an unspoiled wild place and as wildlife habitat.
Do you think you'll be able to keep the oil men away forever? Or do you think they're going to keep passing, keep pushing bills through Congress until one of them gets passed?
They will keep trying, but I think we'll keep stopping them. Because the fact is, the majority of Americans definitely don't think this area should be opened. Polls have shown that. A recent poll was done this past winter, again, indicated that. I'm not going to give you a lot of facts and figures because probably people who are listening wouldn't remember them anyway. But the fact is that by 60% or more, Americans do not want this very special area open to drilling. Another reason I think we'll win is because a lot of people realize that even the Bush administration knows the facts that it has all these wildlife values that would be ruined. They want to open it up not so much because they think the oil will help our country a lot become more secure, but because it is a symbol in a way. It has become a symbol of the areas our country has thought precious to save. And if they can drill in this very precious area that people care about a lot, they can drill pretty much off anywhere, off the coast of Florida, off the coast of California. I don't think that any place would be safe if they really get into there.
To follow up on that question, so the Senate has voted in favor of the drilling.
Well, excuse me, they haven't exactly done that. A lot of the media has given that impression. But what they voted for recently at the well-publicized vote in the middle of March was to include in this year's budget resolution a presumption of revenues from Arctic drilling in this year's budget. That means that they're counting as revenues to help balance the budget, revenues from drilling and from an area that's closed to drilling, and there are no revenues. There wouldn't be any for many years, and nobody knows how much they would be. In this fake balancing picture of the budget, they have included vastly inflated figures. About $3 billion worth of revenues they're projecting from an area that's close to drilling is considered vastly inflated from what oil leases have been getting in the recent past.
So they didn't actually vote in favor of drilling?
No, they did not. But you might call it the first step toward voting in favor of drilling. But they're going to be voting this month, around the middle of April, on sort of the next step in the vote, which is to bring together and iron out the differences between the budget resolutions passed by the House and the Senate. You see, the House, when it passed its budget, they didn't include Arctic drilling in theirs, but the Senate did. So that's one difference between the House and Senate budgets they would have to iron out before Congress can adopt a budget. There are lots of other differences too, many unrelated to the Arctic at all, and it's considered that there are so many differences and a lot of them are controversial that it may be difficult for them to come to an agreement at all. I hope it will be, actually, because that's would be the simplest way to end this particular acute threat.
I was going to ask, is that the next step that you guys are working on, is trying to intervene in that?
Yes. And we're lucky here in California that our two senators have been very good, very strong, and unwavering in support of protecting the refuge.
And so after this step, what comes next? What are the next steps?
Well, I'm not quite sure, but I believe that another step that's projected to come soon would be a vote in the Senate Energy and Natural Resources Committee on an energy bill. They have tried most every Congress to put Arctic drilling into an energy bill, which is sort of the sensible place to put it. It more belongs there than in a budget bill, because Arctic oil drilling has nothing to do in any real logical and fair way with our budget, but it does have to do with energy. The real reason the Bush administration, I think, is pushing drilling in the refuge is because they're trying to obfuscate their failure to provide this country, or to provide leadership in this country for a real, sensible, and conservation-minded energy policy by constantly talking about the fact that drilling in the Arctic, or the supposed fact, it's not really a fact, their claim that Arctic oil drilling would help solve our nation's energy problem and would make us secure from foreign oil, there, by talking about that, it prevents people from noticing, at least so they hope, that they're doing nothing toward energy conservation, nothing to help reduce the amount of gas we use in our cars and trucks, for example, which they could easily do. In fact, closing two simple loopholes for our automobile industry would get more oil, free more use of gas than you could possibly get from opening up the Arctic refuge. One of those loopholes is what we call the SUV loophole, whereby, you know, SUVs and light trucks are allowed to be less efficient than regular cars and get fewer miles per gallon. They wouldn't have to. They could just as easily be made to get as good gas mileage as regular cars, but the automobile industry won't bother to make them that way if they're not required to, as the automobile industry has never made cars more efficient than they were required to. But every time they're required to, they do it. Now, the other thing is, if just the average automobile fleet were required to get just about 2 or 3 more miles per gallon, that alone would save more gas, more oil, than we could get from the Arctic refuge, even by the best estimates.
Mm-hmm. Carl Pope mentioned in his opinion piece for USA Today that you guys have on your website that Arctic drilling is part of a much bigger agenda for big oil. I'm curious how we would see that agenda affecting us in the United States. Are there other areas that are protected now that are threatened by the first step?
Well, I think that he's referring to the fact that the agenda is to open up many other protected places, too. Mm-hmm. That would be all of our western states. There is oil here and there, oil and gas, that they would like to access. They're off the coasts of both coasts, the east coast and west coast. There's probably oil to be found there. And you're right, it's not just the Arctic they're after, but they would like to make energy development the prime use for our public lands, mm-hmm. and not some of the recreational and protection and wildlife habitat uses of it that we think are the most important.
I was wondering if you followed the situation in Canada at all, because I heard that there's also a large potential reserve in northern Canada, and it's like enmeshed in sand, and so they would actually, from what I read, have to burn or kind of like heat the sand up, and like it would cause a huge amount of pollution because they'd be like cooking the sand and then the oil would like ooze out or something like that. And it sounded like it would be like a huge source of pollution, you know, right up in the Arctic Circle area.
That sounds pretty awful the way you describe it, and I have to confess I have not followed that. What's made the news that I've followed from Canada is their effort to put in a gas pipeline, bringing natural gas down to this country from the north. These sands development that you mentioned, I'm sorry, I'm not familiar with that.
And then I had one other question, mm-hmm. actually, might be a little related. I was just reading in the paper that the grizzly bears are invading the polar bear habitat, and there seems to be like this trend of global warming that's affecting the northern regions first. And so it seems like the Arctic wildlife refuge is kind of being degraded, whether or not there's oil drilling going on there. You know, so it seems like there needs to be other efforts underway, you know, a more like holistic approach to preserving the environment, you know, taking into account, you know, the global oil economy and the pollution and so forth.
You're right about global warming or climate change affecting the Arctic regions a lot more than elsewhere so far. And that speaks also to the need for a more conservative energy policy in our country, because it's mainly the use of automobiles and the various things that they emit into the air that causes that global warming. So it is true that the Arctic is getting warmer. The oil industry has long claimed that they will minimize impacts of oil development by doing most of the road building and other developments they need to do in connection with the drilling in winter when everything's frozen over. They will build ice roads that will have no permanent impact, they say. But the number of ice-covered days in the season up there in the Arctic is diminishing rapidly. And by the time they actually get going, if they were to get going, which of course we don't expect to happen because we won't let it happen, by the time they get going, there may be relatively few ice-covered days up in the Arctic Refuge, and they will have to build permanent gravel roads, which will cause a lot worse impact, because to get the gravel, they will have to dig down in the rivers and dewater them, and one effect leads to another. The fish then in the rivers don't have the water, and things go from bad to worse. Mm-hmm. But back to what you were saying in a more general way about global warming, you're right. What else can I say to that? Except yes, it's a bigger problem than just drilling in the Arctic, and it's a little ironic that the oil industries that wants to drill up there is the one that will have their work affected by the global warming that their work is causing. But of course, it's not really they who are causing it; it's we who are causing it. All of us who drive cars,
we're the consumers.
We are the users. We get calls sometimes from people who say, this or that oil company is such bad guys and they're doing these bad things. Shouldn't we just boycott this company and not buy that? And I say, well, if you do, you will just reward the other oil companies, and they are really just as bad. They're all in it together. They all want to drill up there. The only way we can effectively boycott them is to drive less or to elect people to our government that will require the automobile industries to, you know, make better cars, more efficient cars. And it's not just cars either. Our country obviously needs a better public transportation system so we can use trains or buses or other ways of public transit in and between our major cities.
I have a couple questions.
It's getting into a whole other story.
That's okay.
Question.
First of all, how much of our oil consumption is automobile related? Do you know?
I'm not sure, but I think it's more than half.
Mm-hmm. And then my other question, I've noticed a lot of the oil companies, for example, Shell in particular, has had a lot of advertisements recently related to natural gas. And I'm wondering sort of how that figures into that greater oil energy picture.
Natural gas, it would be good to use more natural gas. Of course, it's not without impacts either. But there is, for instance, up in Alaska, there's quite a bit of natural gas. It's always found in the ground together with the oil. And what they've been doing in the past, mainly because they don't know what to do with it, is to burn it off in the air. Just, in other words, wasting it. It would be good to find an efficient way to bring that to market. Might reduce the need for as much oil as we use.
But it requires the same sort of destructive drilling.
It would require a pipeline to transport it to, with all the attendant dangers and potential impacts. But I should think it's a good avenue to pursue.
Okay. So where do you see our energy future going, and where do you think it should go?
I think it's got to go to conservation, not using as much, and toward more renewable energy, wind, is a very good possibility, and other ways, solar energy. These are things that we really, our country needs to invest more in research and development of these. We did have a period, I guess, after the oil crises of the 1970s, when our country was working toward that goal, and tax incentives were provided for people who worked on alternative energies. But after the 80s, there seems to be less interest in that. And lately, we haven't been doing much on that at all, as far as I know.
Well, I've noticed a lot in the past year, I would say. Discussion of nuclear energy has come to the forefront. Do you have any thoughts on
that? As far as I can see, nuclear energy is not a very good avenue to travel, in the sense that the potential for a rare but devastating accident is just more of a chance that we really want to take, mm-hmm. or should want to take.
I wonder, though, at this point, it seems like we're not really making any effort towards other renewable sources of energy. And I have this feeling like the administration is just going to end up pushing a nuclear agenda.
Well, that's the fault of this administration. It's not the only thing they're doing that's not good for this country or for the world, future of the world itself. So mm-hmm. that's the sort of thing I would expect them to push, but that doesn't mean to say that it's a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Do you guys have any more questions?
Could I just say one thing about the sure. Arctic Refuge where we started? We're getting away from it a little bit toward talking about energy, which is good. It just shows how those two topics are really very, very closely connected.
Absolutely.
But I just wanted to mention that I personally have been on 5 separate trips up into the Arctic Refuge
wow.
over the years, and I have come to care a lot about that area and really think it is worth all the hyperbole you might read about what a magnificent, unique, and wonderful area it is. And I am convinced that this country needs to save an area like that and others that are so valuable for the world.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, some good hiking up there, isn't it?
Good hiking, oh
excellent.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
I was going to say we should all go up there and go hiking, but probably best to stay away, really.
Leave
it unspoiled.
No, it's okay to go there. As long as great crowds don't come. And the area is so remote that protects it from great crowds. It's okay for people who step softly and gently to go there. It's all right. In fact, it's important because even though probably now in our country millions of people support protecting the area, people who have never been there, if they have been there, they can speak even more loudly. I'll never forget the first time I went to Washington, D.C. as a volunteer lobbyist for the Arctic Refuge. It was maybe 6 months after my first trip there, and I was privileged to visit the office of one senator and look him in the eye and say to him, I know we need to protect this area because I have been there and I know what it's like. And that's there's a lot of power in being able to say that.
Are you optimistic?
I'm cautiously optimistic.
Okay, well, best of luck.
Well, thank you very much, Vicky. It was great talking to you.
You're welcome.
Stay tuned for the activist calendar.
Coming up.